This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to this very special episode. Here is a Place to Be Nation Pop Network special look at the great sitcom Veep. I am JT Rosero. You know me, of course, from a plethora of shows across both of our networks. And I'm joined here tonight by two good friends that are also Veepaholics. And I should say that we're doing the show because Veep series finale is coming up this Sunday. And we needed to talk about its place in history. We needed to talk about Julie Louis-Dreyfus. And, of course, we needed to levy our predictions for what's going to happen with the big election in the finale. So let me go ahead and bring in my guests. The first, you know, is the host of Greetings from Allentown. He is a regular on the Place to Be podcast with me and Scott Griscolo. And he is Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
I am great. And the best part about doing this podcast right now is it'll probably be the first time my wife will ever be interested in listening to a podcast that I do.
So I'll definitely bait you into saying something real bad.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
I should also mention the co-host of the Adams Division, just so Steve Bennett gets so warm and fuzzy. So there you go. And also joining us, I'm going to still say he's the co-host of Dadcast with me, even though it's been like 2 years since we've done one. And it was a trilogy, really. Like, there's the great trilogy, Star Wars and Godfather and all these other ones. But the Dadcast trilogy is up there with any of them. And that is my best friend in the world, Mr. Don Carrara. Don, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys today? I'm really excited to talk about Veep. I'm actually hoping that this podcast will entice my wife, Michelle, to actually watch. I told her I was doing this tonight. And she said, I think I actually need to watch that series from the beginning. So I'm ready to start it all over again.
It's a worthwhile journey because it's so spread out. And like, I know you got into it a little bit. I guess we can start there. So kind of how we found it. Like I got in on the ground floor. And I know I had to nudge you, Don, to watch it a little bit. So I feel like you're even more well-versed than I am, because I feel like you were watching like even the earlier ones more recently than me, right? Because it took you at least two seasons, right, before you were kind of in, and then you binged and then got into it.
Yeah, it might have even been three. And I have to, you know, I have to thank you, because you did this also for The Office. And I trust your comedy judgment probably more than anybody, because, you know, I was a huge Seinfeld fan, but for some reason I did not get in when this show first started airing. You kept, you know, poking and prodding me to try it. And finally, like, once I started, you know, binging those, it was just an automatic hook. I was doing it every single night. And then I think I came on board live maybe for like season four. I think that's when I started watching it when it aired. So it's just been a blast. I can't even believe that it was something I didn't even start off watching from the get-go.
And like The Office, you probably got in like at the right time, because like by season three and four, Veep really found its groove, just like any great sitcom. So it might have lost you. Like the first season is good, but this definitely takes a little bit to get going. So I think, you know, being able to get you to a point where I was like, you know, this is getting really, really good. You need to get in now. So I think that was good, because by the time you got live, it was at its, you know, at its peak. That I don't know if the peak ever ended.
Without a doubt. I mean, they just seem to top each other. They top themselves every single season. And you can't say that about every show. Usually you start to see shows wane. I was actually a little upset when, you know, they said this was going to be the final season, but I'm actually glad that they're going to go out on top. They're not going to overstay their welcome, but it's just brilliant. Brilliant comedic timing, improvisation, just so many wonderful facets, and just cutting each other up left and right every single season. And it's just, how can they top the latest comment that they actually said, the latest joke? It's been a hell of a ride.
And Peter, it's interesting too, because like Don mentioned, like, you're sad to see it go because they're such at their peak, but on the, you know, converse side, they're almost out of storyline. Like, I think there's plenty of material they could keep mining, but at some point she's either going to win or lose and be done, right? I mean, so like, this seems like a natural endpoint. I guess you could have done a season fully of her as president, which we haven't really gotten, but maybe that's the tragedy baked in that we'll talk about later, that she maybe never will. So, like, do you agree? Well, A, tell us about how you first stumbled into the show and when you started watching. And then also, do you agree that they're kind of going out on top? I think there's a lot of gas in the tank from a comedic value standpoint, because they are still, like, just throwing heaters after heaters every week. But is there actually storyline material left?
Yeah, well, to the whole thing about it ending now on top, this show is like the Sandy Koufax of sitcoms, in that Sandy Koufax was a pitcher in the 60s who probably had like his greatest season in his last year, so when he was 30 years old. So it's kind of like that. I ended up watching this show because my friend Merrill was badgering me, and usually he badgers me about, oh, you got to watch Breaking Bad, you got to watch this or that, or usually The Wire. Like, oh, he really wants me to watch The Wire. And I intensely resist this. But I didn't in this case because of the cat. Like, I knew people from the cast. Like, okay, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, I know, you know, she's had successful shows multiple before. And also, I liked Reed Scott on My Boys. So that's probably a very unusual example of knowing somebody from before. So I watched this. He had like told me about some of the things that had happened, and I bought season one blind on actually Prime Video, and absolutely loved it. Bought every season afterwards and made sure I got the free HBO preview from the cable company during Veep season.
So that I could
watch it live, and we could just text the quotes back and forth to each other as the show airs.
And it's so good, and I feel like it's one of those shows that people are just going to discover as the years go on and realize maybe what they missed out on, because I feel like it's really critically acclaimed, and I think it does well enough, but you don't see a ton about it. Like, at least I don't. I mean, amongst critics and stuff, you do, but just like from my friends and stuff, like, and Don, like, you know, you obviously know our friend group pretty well. I think you and maybe Andy are like the only ones I ever really talk about this. And even Andy, I don't think he's current on the show. So it's like, you know, and I feel like we have a pretty wide swath of friends out there that, for whatever reason, this seems to be kind of off the radar for a lot of people. I don't know if it's the HBO component of it or just the political piece. But they're missing out.
Oh, I think part of it is because of Game of Thrones taking up all the oxygen in the room when they're airing concurrently like they are now.
I guess so. That could be part of it.
And I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan, but I think I actually got into Veep before I actually started binging Game of Thrones, in two completely different shows, different fan bases. But I feel, too, coming back to even what you said, Justin, that I don't know. Sometimes I think that comedies, they don't get their, you know, rightful place at the table. And I think these other shows, like you guys also mentioned, like Breaking Bad, coming back to Game of Thrones, and, you know, even like Walking Dead, that have, you know, mass amounts of fans, sometimes end up overshadowing this. But it's picked up so many awards and critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm just surprised, too, that it is one of those things, too, even in, you know, outside of other groups I've been a part of, even people I work with, no one really watches it. So I've tried to entice people, kind of like you did to me, to just hop on board. And I actually got a colleague to do it. I actually got it as a gift for her for Christmas, and she and her family actually started watching it and are, you know, into season one right now. So
it has won a ton of awards, and it's great because I feel like it's kind of made up for Julia Louis-Dreyfus, for all the Elaine, you know, kind of snubs and stuff that she went through in the 90s. And I think she started to get recognized more, amazingly enough, with the, you know, Christine. But now it's like this show was just, you know, lauded with time. I mean, if you go through the Wikipedia page of like what they've won, it's just, you know, gobs of them every year.
And broke the Seinfeld curse, too.
Oh, for sure. Yes, that as well. Right. The first one. Well, she did it twice, really, because, I mean, New Adventures of Old Christine was, I honestly didn't really watch it, but I know it did well and it had quite the run. So she kind of busted the curse then. And then this was just like, you know, the icing on the cake of just destroying the thing and delivering a show that arguably, you know, you and I and Peter, I know you're a Seinfeld guy, too. You know, we hold Seinfeld, obviously, in extreme acclaim. And I'm really struggling now. Like if you asked me to sit here and rank like Curb, Veep, and Seinfeld, like I just shut down. Like I can't even sort out in my mind where I would rank those three shows. Like I feel like Veep's hit rate is much higher than like I feel Seinfeld has some down episodes, even Curb has some slow episodes, and maybe it's because I haven't rewatched the Veep ones like a ton. Like Seinfeld I've seen so many times, and Curb I've seen so many times. So maybe that's part of it. But Peter, do you agree? Like, does Veep seem to have less misses to you? And I know it's less episodes overall, so that probably helps, but
yeah,
that's my read on it.
Well, for me, Veep is number one. And in fact, I rank it number one for sitcoms above everything. Yes, even above Mr. Belvedere. And I say that as somebody who is so passionate about old sitcoms. When somebody in the Place to Be Nation chat earlier proposed, who is better, Potsy or Ralph Malph? And yes. I went on like this five chat diatribe about how Potsy is better for just about any situation. Like, that's how I am with sitcoms. And Veep is just... has just raised the bar for like all of time. I mean, I've never laughed so hard so many times at this one show. Even if it's only 64 episodes, I feel like I've laughed the equivalent of like 400 episodes of another show.
It's amazing. And it's so quick. God, Don.
Yeah. And I find myself, this is one of the few shows where I laugh so hard, and we've watched a bunch of episodes together, that we have to rewind to catch the next part of the joke because you're still laughing into the next piece of dialogue. And I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus unfiltered, and they're just so fast with the insults. It's just machine gun fire that even yesterday, just by myself, even ones I don't like laugh out loud, but I'm just kind of like, laughing to myself. I'm backing it up just to hear the joke again, because they land so well. And to me, and I've struggled with this too, to me though, this has solidified her this is her number one role. And I think it actually trumps Elaine. And I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, as you know. Mm-hmm. But I think having her kind of go off the reservation a little bit, she's not really tied down to, like, the NBC, whatever, FCC, whatever, those kind of guidelines that they had to adhere to. And it's just been amazing. I just love to hear just the shit that comes out of her mouth. It's hysterical and fucking brilliant.
And I agree. I have her over Elaine too, which it sounds blasphemous probably to people who are diehard Seinfeld fans that haven't watched Veep. Part of it is that, you know, she is the focal point of the show, where Seinfeld, the four of them are. You could argue that classically, as an actress, she was the best of the Seinfeld four, but she wasn't always presented as the top dog in that show. And this is someone that, you know, recently has pretty much rewatched them all to write them up. While she gets her due, oftentimes she is presented as kind of a background player in a lot of episodes, or you know, not getting the key storyline, and that evolves over time. She obviously gets tons of screen time, but she's never presented as the alpha, and here she's the alpha. And I think what gives her so much extra credit for me too on Veep is the way she has raised all of these other people around her. And I'm not saying this group was not great actors or actresses in their own right before the show, but if you look at a lot of them in season one and where they are now, like, and how they're hanging with her, and they're just feeding off the energy that she brings to the show, and you know that they've just absorbed from working with her, just one of the great improv actresses and sitcom actresses of all time. And again, there's some quality folks on here, but you can tell that they've all just upped their game with her. And to me, that's something that didn't happen with Seinfeld, because it was more that, you know, besides Jerry, they all kind of came in with the chops. Whereas with her, you know, with this show, she's really raising the game. I mean, you look at, you know, guys that were well-known kind of, you know, funny bit players like a Gary Cole or a Matt Walsh. You know, you've seen in Dodgeball, you see him in Old School. You know, like, these guys pop up everywhere, and they're real funny. But here, like, just getting the starring role and getting a spar with her has just, you know, watching them evolve from the early seasons has just been amazing, to the point where it's like Parks and Recreation became, you know, is another great example to comp this to. Just such a great ensemble cast, where it's no longer Julia Louis-Dreyfus and a bunch of other folks around her, like it was probably kind of in season one and maybe two. Now it's just like a full ensemble show where any of these characters can completely carry a scene with their words, or in the case of Gary, just with his facial expressions, which is fucking amazing.
He's great.
So, Peter, what are your thoughts on that? And then I wanted to talk about him actually for a minute.
Well, I agree with everything you said, but it's even in spite of all that, how great she is on this show, she's probably not even in my top five favorite characters on Veep, as insane as that sounds, because of all the great, you know, character development you've had with the other people on the show. Go back to season one. Think of where, you know, Jonah Ryan as kind of the, you know, dick swinging, you know, guy who works in, you know, the vice president's office or whatever he was. And now look where he's evolved to. We had Gary Cole come in later, you know, Ben Cafferty. I pretty much, he has the highest laugh percentage of, I laugh at everything he says. I don't know if it's his delivery or what it is. Amy, like how she's kind of come along during the series. And of course, Dan Egan, or as I want to call him, Danny Egan, because I'm watching that storyline where he's on CBS this morning hosting it from season six earlier today. I mean, there's just, I mean, it's kind of like The Simpsons in a way, right, where, and the fact that it's, you know, a live action show, and there are so many of these great characters, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the world they've built up around, and it's such absurdity. Well, I guess we can get into the politics of it too, but this, and it's funny how it's, you know, this show really came around. Like, you always hear some shows were too early or too ahead of their time or maybe a little late. Like, this show happening during the current political landscape, I mean, you couldn't have asked for like a better background. And Peter, you and I were kind of riffing on this off air about how I was reading an article earlier that kind of said, you know, before the season, we're not going to kind of take shots at Trump or bring up Trump. But they are, and they do it in such a beautiful way, where they're just completely mocking the entire current political scheme and world. But they're doing it through the lens of these characters, where they're not mocking him, they're not talking about him, but they all have picked up traits and characteristics of his presidency and is blowing it out into the absurdity that you could actually believe would be happening. Like, some of the stuff happening in season 7 mirrors Seinfeld season 9, where it's just completely off the fucking reservation. But because of the reality we live in politics, it's all believable. Like, and I guess we should, you know, I'll put a warning in the write-up that this is spoiler-filled through episode, you know, season 7, whatever the newest one was, episode 7 or 6, whatever the pre-finale one was.
6,
okay. So, like, you know, the whole Jonah thing with the chicken pox and the, you know, vaccination, like, that is 100% realistic. Like, it seems absurd, right? But it is so, like, hot button and on point. And I was just, like, waiting for the payoff. And the great thing with the show is, like, the payoff can come in 9 different ways. Like, I'm like, all right, he's at this thing. Someone's definitely getting infected because he's holding the baby. So I'm like, is the baby going to die? You know, is he going to die? Like, there's so many possibilities. And then him killing the fucking governor and his dad because of the chicken pox and the anti-vax stuff is just like, it's just amazing. And the development of him has been fantastic with the, you know, Don, I kind of was teasing because I didn't want to spoil it for you, but what did you think of the payoff of him obviously being married to his wife, being sister with his brother, sister with his wife.
Oh, you know, I loved what they have done with Jonah. He's just a friggin' buffoon, but he, to me, is one of the, he's another one. He's one of the more fascinating characters on that. And he just continues to have the shit piled on him. I'm like, there's no way this is going to he's going to start this relationship with his father. And then, I did not see that coming. It was interesting because I thought it was going to go a completely different way, but then he just like embraces this guy who he's just shit all over in the season, and he ends up frigging killing him from the chicken pox. And then we're kind of still dealing with this whole kind of married within the family type of thing. But I love that he is kind of standing in for this as this pseudo Trump. They did a great thing last night. Sunday's episode. Yeah. With Amy, who ended up, they almost made her like Kellyanne Conway. Did you guys catch that?
Where she's just fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, with, yeah. She was like all dolled up.
Yeah.
Yep. Had her, she was on like whatever, one of those talk shows. And I'm like, oh my God, she's spoofing Kellyanne Conway. And that's kind of leading into some things I probably want to talk about later. I know we'll get to that in terms of like where we think the ending of the show is going to go. But I love Jonah. I think he's, I'd watch a spinoff of him if they ever went that way, because he's cartoonish, but at the same time he's had some of the best luck happen to him. And kind of, you know, I don't know what you guys think.
Confidence will take you a long way. That's what Jonah's, the lesson of Jonah is, regardless of how absurd it is. I love the cast of misfits they had with him early in the year too, with Patton Oswalt and I always want to call him Oswald, but Oswald from Drew Carey Show. I drew on Diedrich Bader. We're awesome around him because, like, he's basically, like, it's such a beautiful story. You don't understand why they're with him unless you really watch the evolution of the show, because he is now stuck with, like, the bottom of the bottom of those who have just, like, you know, bottomed out on everything else. Like, they're the two big losers. One went to jail. The other one, you know, in theory, got castrated or was, you know, grabbing everyone's ball. So it's like, He gets stuck with these bums, and here we are at the bottom of the barrel with these two guys that are just looking for any kind of job. And then the same goes for Amy, because, you know, she so desperately hates Selena and wants out that she's willing to take this job with this loser that she knows deep down has no fucking chance. at all. So it's just, it's been this like great rise where he's just attracting all these losers at the bottom and somehow, you know, just failing upward.
Yeah.
But any thoughts on him, Peter? Or I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you guys can jump ahead. I'll come back.
Well, that's kind of a theme across not only Jonah, but like a lot of other characters, kind of the accidental things that especially that have been happening to Richard Splett, who I constantly call Richard T. Splett because of that one line that he had several seasons ago where he introduces himself as Richard T. Splett. I don't know why I said T. My middle name is actually John. Like, and how he's kind of evolved upward now and holds major political office without ever actually being elected to anything. The 7-Eleven mayor. I mean, that satire is quite on the nose, but it's hilarious nonetheless.
And he's such a beautiful man. Like his delivery, he's so pure. You know, so pure of art. Excuse me. he's just like, yeah, he's written so well, and he's just the one shining beacon in this world of misfits. And you would expect, like, maybe you think kind of Gary's that at times, but he's just as kind of douchey as the rest at this point. So Richard is really the one beacon of light that exists in the world of Veep. What were you going to say before, Don? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I can swing back to Richard too. Just the moment too with. And Jonah's had some of these just like little moments, but when he grabbed that baby and the baby was crying, and then I think it was even like a couple seasons ago when, you know, he's doing that promotional ad and he's like chopping the wood and then they edit and the wood just splits. And then he hit that guy with the sledgehammer? yeah. And since he gets all these shitty moments, but they've done that well. But back to, and even to Richard, totally agree with you on that, because he is by far the most genuine person on that show. And you would think because of that would be getting attacked so much, but everybody just always seems to love him and kind of, you know, ask for his advice and they kind of gravitate towards him. So I loved what they've done with his cat. And he's just a brilliant comedic actor, and the delivery, I'm just always on point. I'm so glad that he joined. Thought he was just going to be this kind of supporting character, maybe not be in every episode, and they definitely have utilized him to all of his capabilities.
And that's the amazing thing too, because these episodes are not that long, and the quality and, you know, how much they jam in and the quickness of the scenes and how many characters and actors they can get into these scenes and give them shine. Like, do you ever walk away from an episode feeling like, oh, we didn't get enough Gary, or oh, we didn't get enough Kent? I mean, obviously you'd always want more because it's so good, but like, I don't ever come out feeling like, oh, they really screwed Ben in this episode. You know, like every episode, all these characters get shine, and it's amazing. It speaks to how quick it moves and how fast the dialogue is, and you really got to pay attention to, which is a lot of times why I don't watch it live, because I'm like, it's 11 o'clock at night. Like, I really want to focus, you know, I'd be like, I really want to pay attention to it. So yeah, that's one of the biggest takeaways for me, is just how much they get out of every minute of every show.
And those fast things, you know, I mentioned the things with Jonah and just these sometimes these subtle moments, and then they'll cut to a new scene. So even the editing helps bring out some of that humor that we all love. And it's perfect because it'll go from just something that's one extreme, and then it cuts to another character in an entirely different location. And I think that also helps the humor and to mm-hmm. to give those characters their kind of shining moments. So I absolutely agree with that.
And just think of how fleshed out as well, like the background characters are, like a Tom James.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or even, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but the Finnish lady that was all over.
Minna.
Like, even her, like, there's already so much development in her as a character that when she pops up, you just know, like, the relationship already with her and Selena. And these are just background characters that have already been, just gotten just enough development to where we understand what they're about and who they are. So when you know Tom James is there and he tells Selena he loves her, like, you know he's fucking full of shit. Like, you know, even though you want to believe it, like, this is the time he means it. Like, you know, before she went out to give the speech at the cabin, you know, in episode 2, I think it was, it's like you want to believe this is the time he really means it, you know, like he really, and I think he does really mean it, but this is the time where maybe he's not using it for, you know, politics. And, you know, you just kind of waiting for him to pop back up in the finale to see how he can put the, you know, screws to her just one last time, or does he actually help her out for once? But, you know, it just speaks to the depth of the bench that they've built up with all these background characters as well.
Oh, yeah, I love the background. I mean, there's so many. Roger Furlong, Jeff, obviously we love Uncle Jeff, Jeff Kane. Yes. He was great. He popped up last night again. I just, every time that man's on screen, I always remember him from Ghostbusters 2, Peter McNichol, you know, he never did. I don't think I've ever seen him do anything like what he's done on Veep. And another one, again, you're taking these great actors and you're putting them, having them do things and having them do roles that, same with Hugh Laurie as Tom James. You always remembered him from House. And also amazing comic timing. So they're really getting as much as they can out of these characters. But love Jeff Kane and Roger Furlong. It's like they're trying to top each other for the best insults.
And it's out of the Seinfeld. It's out of the Seinfeld playbook too. You know, it's like just getting these, you know, actors to come in and play minor roles in guest spots, and it just works out so well. Like, we, you know, even Michael McKean in episode 6, you know, when he popped out, I got mad at him for a second for how he treated Jimmy. But, you know, it was just when he showed up, I'm like, oh, this is perfect casting. Like, this is amazing. You know, he's such a douche. And then, you know, he ends up paralyzed. And I love that ending where he's just fucking rambling on talking to Richard about his life, you know, and how it's gone wrong. And like, they leave him in the fucking room by himself. It was so good. But Peter, let's talk Gary. So are either of you Arrested Development watchers?
Yes, I am.
I've only watched a little bit of season one, so I won't be able to probably talk as in depth as you guys, but I'll listen.
All right. So I think we have like a poor man's Elaine versus Selena argument with him, because, you know, like in he's so awesome as Buster Bluth, the neurotic kind of, you know, mama's boy son in Arrested Development. And then bang, he comes in as Gary Walsh. He was just like kind of an evolved version of Buster Bluth in a way. And he, again, just the way, you know, he's, Peter, you'll probably appreciate it, kind of the Kane, like 97, 98 Kane of Veep, where, you know, just tells these stories through his facial expressions alone, or like an El Generico or whatever, where like, you know, he mumbles and you could barely hear what he's saying half the time, but his facial expressions and the way he says it, and he lives in this whisper box of everything, and just with his love and, you know, adoration of Selena, this leaks through everything he does. And you keep just waiting for them to end up together. Like, is it going to happen or not? We'll see. But he is so in love with her. But just like the things he says and his hatred of Catherine has been such a good running through line through the whole show. Just like his fully disdain for her. And the way he just negatively shits on everything she says and does is just amazing. Like this last episode when she comes in the dress and then they pan and he's sitting there looking at the newspaper. Just like with the look on his face and just complete disregard.
Didn't he say something too about her haircut under his breath? He's like, my kingdom for a barrette.
Yes. But Peter, give me a talk Buster versus Gary.
I would. There are definite similarities between Selena and why am I blanking on Lucille, or Lucille One from Arrested Development, in terms of the kind of mommy complex that Tody Hale's character has in both of them. I mean, even like the act of when Selena was doing the more political stuff and she would meet the people, the way Gary would always like lead in and do the that's not his wife, is his mistress, and like say stuff really quick to like brief her on like who these people were. It's like, that is very much real. I mean, there are people like that who are actually doing that Gary job in Washington, D.C. And the way he could just convey everything with his facial expressions, and Buster could do the same thing as well. Although with Buster's character was the Buster character was incredibly over the top, given where that went with the hand and all that stuff. The way Gary just sort of evolved, like they gave him that love interest for a very brief period. They're in that room with the cheeses. It's been a while since I've seen those episodes, but he definitely has issues interacting with people, other people normally, except for Selena, because that's basically his entire life. Some people join the priesthood and serve God. He has joined whatever the hell it is under Selena and is serving her.
And it ties right into him doing the faith, what was it called, the faith based, whatever the fuck it was, running there.
Buy a lot of Bibles. Yeah.
Yes. So it was good to see him get his brief run there, and where they kind of shook things up within the team. And I really liked the twist of having Marjorie as the bad girl for those couple episodes and just how good she was at it. And she has kind of quietly climbed the ladder too, like, you know, her, you know, here and there in season five. And but then by the end of season six and all through this season, like, she has really upped her role too and just been really, really funny. Where she almost, you know, is kind of in on the joke of what a loser Catherine is half the time, which I think Catherine is maybe one of the most, I feel like everything else is very realistic. I think if they veered off anywhere into maybe a bit over the top parody, like maybe you could say like a late era Seinfeld kind of thing would be her. Like maybe like, I'm not even complaining about it because it's really funny when it is batter her, but it may be like one step too far with her character of just what a beaten down idiot she's become. But you know, because she was a pretty proud, you know, stand up for herself girl, and now she's just kind of crumbled into this mess. And I know she's got the broken family and is in the public spotlight, so yeah, maybe it's based in reality. But if there was one character that I think is maybe a little off the reservation through all this, it's been her.
Well, I don't know if you should use the term off the reservation, given that Marjorie is of Native American descent. But anyway, her story, like her mommy issues, where she is literally dating the double for Selena,
yes,
in the Secret Service, is quite hilarious. Although I will say, I don't think that Catherine probably is like my least favorite out of the major characters. However, the thing that they did where she's dating the kid from Iran at one point, I want to say that was like season three, that leads to the song that Selena sings at that speech, Catherine, don't talk about Israel. I think it's 50 ways to 50 ways to lose in Denver or something like that. Like that, just the stuff that they come up with is incredible, even for characters that I don't even like that much.
Right. And I mean, she, you know, and she's really only least likable because of how stacked everything else is. It's like, I mean, you know, someone has to be at the bottom, right? I mean, when you have such a loaded team, there's always still has to be someone who bats ninth. And that's her. I do think she's become better as the more absurd she's gotten. Like, she was more annoying to me early on, and now it's like because she's become such a parody, because Marjorie offsets her so well. And I don't know how like, it didn't really fully click to me about how she pretty much was dating her mom in a way until they said it in this episode. I forget who made the reference about the marrying a doppelganger or whatever, and that's when it really kind of came into light for me. Like, oh yeah, that's really what they've been doing this whole time. I'm not sure why it didn't click with me before that, but. Any other characters we wanted to touch on? We didn't really get too much into Dan, Kent, or Mike. Any comments on any of those guys, Dan? I mean, Don.
Yeah. with Dan. Dan's another one who just like he's perfectly smarmy. And I remember him from, I don't know if you guys ever watched the show The Big C. It was on Showtime, and he played. He's not a good of an actor. He is. He played a completely opposite character. He played this. Laura Linney's character has cancer. He played her doctor, and he was so compassionate and just empathetic. And then you see him on this, and he's a stereotype in some way, kind of like this guy that's he's going to get all the women. The in bed with Selena was a little bit surprising to me. That was like, but also not kind of within the context of that story. But he's one he will go with whomever has the most power. So I love what they're doing in the last few episodes, where he's tied to Richard because, you know, he's kind of been with Selena. He's not. He was working with Amy, and then he was doing the kind of like the Today Show. And wasn't there something else, another job that he had at one point? I just love how he kind of just like migrates and will just be with, you know, the position of power at the time just to try to further advance himself, but he doesn't ever really advance himself at all. As for Mike, I feel like he's actually been on the sidelines a little bit this year.
Which I'm kind of okay with.
Yeah, like I like the I like what they did the last episode where, you know, the podcast, and you actually see it from the point of view of what the podcast would look like. And I think they're setting him up to potentially finally win at the end because he gets that job, I guess, with CBS, right? But yeah. At the same time, they're also tailoring him the way they want to see fit. So, you know, is he actually going to come out in the end? Is he going to adopt another friggin' kid? And, which was great. I love it. Ken had a great line too to Ellen, didn't she? Like, didn't she say like, "Oh, I'm going to be president"? He's like, "No, you will not." You remember that? It was just like perfect Gary Cole. That's all he needed to say in that. That was awesome. There's just so many. There's just so many characters to talk about. We'd almost have to do like a part two of this of just the kind of the supporting cast and even the guest stars. But it's been amazing.
Well, I think that Dan, there's a million Dans in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., which goes into how well researched I think this show is and how maybe sadly true to life mm-hmm. Veep actually is with some of the characters.
Extremely true to life, yeah.
But with Mike, the way he's evolved, every single season they give him some weird backstory. Like early on, there was him talking about his non-existent dog, and then the thing with the kid, and then, oh, I'm going to get a job with the NHL that ends up falling through, so that he starts making references to the LPGA tour because he might be able to get a gig there as well. Some of the pathetic, hilarious stuff, a lot of that has come from Mike. A personal favorite of mine would be he needed Jonah to keep quiet, so Jonah made him get on his knees and sing. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
He made him sing Goober Peas. the guy opens the door, and he sees this going on as Jonah is laughing and clapping, and he just quietly closes the door. Similar to, you know, when Gary saw Selena and Tom James doing the hibbity jibbity mm-hmm. in the office there that one time. But yeah, I mean, Mike's role is definitely less now because it seems like he and Leon West switched places at some point mm-hmm. around the end of season 6, beginning of season 7. But
I like how they just dumped that on you. Like, we started season 7, there he is, Leon's in the role, because, you know, he's always a big antagonist to Selena, but I like how they don't care. They recognize that he's so much better as a press and speechwriter than Mike was, because Mike was a fucking mess. So I like how they just kind of made that switch.
Well, Mike is...
What did you say? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Mike is a commentary on the media brand these days mm-hmm. that just really cultivate relationships with one party or the other, like a Fox News with the Republicans or MSNBC with the Democrats or specific people, you know, within those networks that are closely identified with one side or the other. And that, right. That's kind of where the commentary on him has come from.
McClintock.
McClintock.
He's the guy. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry. I forget your point.
Yeah, I'm just I definitely the switch with Leon. Because Leon has become kind of that punching bag this season. And because remember that quote, I think it was from, I don't know, I think it was maybe from season 4, like someone, I think it was Dan that said, he goes, trust me, he goes, no one wants to be Mike. Mike doesn't even want to be Mike. So it was one of those, just like this poor bastard. And now he's, you know, that's why I liked what they did. They gave him a little bit of spotlight in the last episode, because I always thought he was another just kind of gem that every time he'd pop up, just something ridiculous, and she would just come after him. She told him, like, I don't know, where were they? He had the sunblock all over his face. And she's like, you look like the least fucked geisha. just moments like that, just kind of with the Catherine thing, just set up for Selena's wrath. But yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with him, because he's another one that's kind of like, he could be a dick, but he could also be really likable. Not right. necessarily the likability of Richard Splett, but another one, he's kind of felt bad for him at some times. Because he is just trying to do the right thing, but yeah, he always fucks it up.
God, we haven't even gotten into like the lines, you know, like the classic lines. There's so many. I don't even know how we even would. But Mike is like the guy that everyone knows, right? He's always talking about the next big thing, where he's headed, what he's going to be doing. And that's what, you know, kind of what you were getting at, Peter, just the guy who's always got what's cooked, you know, something else is cooking, or I got this in the works, and like none of it ever pans out. Just keep pushing the goalposts. And then eventually maybe something Cook, you know, hits, but usually it's just kind of an endless stream of schemes that never pay off. Going really quick back to Dan, I liked the thing with him and Selena, because it was like a shutdown of him. Like, he's a super player. He thinks he can get whoever he wants. He's like all cocky about himself because he, you know, nailed Selena. And then it just like, she just puts him in his place so quickly that you like remember you know, who he, you know, just makes you remember he's just like a nobody in the world. You know, he thinks he's such a, you know, king shit or whatever. And then within just like the snap of a finger, she's like, get up, get the remote, you're fired. Like, basically, he just, you know, you could see where maybe he would have fell and wanted to keep going. And she's like, she treated him like he treated everyone else. So I thought that was a cool twist. And then, of course, him dating the abortion doctor at the funeral. It's like,
he still has to Venmo Amy the rest of it.
That's right. Yes. He still owes her half. Jesus. His half. Jonah, one of the best scenes. There's two scenes I wanted to talk about with him that I love. One was the basketball game. And one of the characters we have not talked about, and I cannot remember his name, but it was who's Furlong's assistant? They got the glasses.
Will.
Oh, Will. Will. Yep.
Oh,
Will.
My God. And they got one more where he had to, you know, insult himself in, you know, whatever.
Yep.
What did he say? It turned, God, what the fuck did he say in this one? I can't even remember the line.
I'm going to look up like a Will. It's brutal. They're always brutal. I'll look it up.
But there's one where they're playing basketball, and that's around when Jonah starts the Jeffersons as like kind of the outcasts in Washington, which I thought was like a brilliant thing too. It just kind of shows that he's always hustling, like regardless of, he has like no self-awareness of what he's like out in the world. And that confidence has just carried him. But it does bring you to arguably the greatest, I think is maybe the greatest scene in peak Veep was the hearing, the Senate hearing, where they have to read Jonah's, the list of insult names. Which is like the greatest thing of all time. Like, I mean, you knew they were sitting for like hours in the writing room just coming up with those fucking names. And who knows how many were improvised as well. It was such an amazing, amazing scene.
The Cloud Botherer.
Cloud Botherer is so good.
Somebody goes, the guy who got that job, like that, that's how they probably did it. Like, okay, you have to read all these names and not laugh. And if you don't, you get the job, because there must have been like 25 of them. And they, though, yeah, those were brilliant.
I got them all. There's 21. Ready? Here they are.
Spewbaca.
J-Rock, Guy Scraper, the pointless Giant, Benedict come in his own hand, Galien, Jizzy Gillespie, Chimpanzee, Wadzilla, Transgender Former, the 60-Foot Virgin, Teenage Mutant Ninja Asshole, 12 Years a Slave to Jerking Off, Jonah Ono, Jack and the Giant Jackoff, Scrotum Pole, Tinker Balls, the Cloud Botherer, Super Califragilistic Dick Cheese, Spewbaca, Hagrid's Nutsack, and One Erection.
Oh God,
those are all the new.
You know,
names.
My friends in college called me Tall McCartney.
What season was that one?
I believe it was the end of season 3 or 4.
Yeah, you may be right. Yeah, it wasn't fun. Yeah, it was earlier than that.
I remember when I don't think I had watched that yet. You're like, wait till you get to the scene. It's
season 4. Season 4, episode 9, the Jonad files.
Oh, it was so good.
Oh, that is the best. I mean, like, you know, I remember, Don, when we were talking, like, when you kind of introduced me to Curb, like, Crazy Ass Killer was kind of the intro episode. Like, to me, I think that would be, like, the intro episode for Veep for me. If I was just showing someone off the street, just, like, an example of how funny it could be, because the nicknames are just amazing.
Yeah, I know we always talk about the Cloud Botherer was just that's the one that stands out to me. And then the other one we always talk about when he walks by. Though I think the other one we always address when he's leaving and he sees like the African American guys on the corner and he's walking. He's like, "Oh, sitting there on the corner," and they're like, "What'd you say?" He's like, "Nothing." It's just those little, like, just the moments that he gets, they've really just tapped into everything that he can do and have given him quite a bit. He's definitely one of my favorites.
And the way he was even talking to the Secret Service guy, you know, he looks like looking in a mirror, a hot mirror, you know, and like, even his sister wife is excellent too. I mean, that was like perfect casting. They really fell into that one because she is so good. Is just like, you know, totally in awe of him. It just goes with everything he says. This is really great. All right. Yeah. Before we get to predictions, anything else, any character or story or episode or anything that we didn't touch on that you guys wanted to hit? Oh, Sue. Should we talk about Sue? We haven't mentioned Sue. who
she just kind of disappeared, huh?
She just vanished. Yeah, she was Selena's secretary. Very direct, very to the point, no bullshit. You know, she was really funny, and then she just kind of went away. I'm not sure if... Peter, do you know when she went away? Was she there until she wasn't Veep anymore? Was that pretty much it, or did she leave him before that? Is she only there for like a season?
I want to say no. I thought she was there up through about season five. I want to say.
All right, so she did 48 episodes.
That would put her through season five because it was 8 in the first season and then 10 for each of the next 5 seasons.
Okay.
So yeah, she would have been there through season 5.
Well, through 4. Oh no, 5. You're right. 48. Yep. 1, 2, 3. Yep. 48. Wow. God, that long, huh? I guess yeah, because that would have made sense. When Selena was completely out of office, she would have lost her as a secretary. So.
Yeah, her weird interactions and relationship with Kent for that one season
was always
kind of an interesting thing that you thought might lead somewhere, but then you thought, well, probably not, and then it didn't really lead anywhere, but you didn't feel disappointed because of just how weird those interactions were between the two of them, who were actually more similar than different.
I love, too, in this episode where Selena's talking about, like, who'd be looking up the Asian bondage or whatever. She's like, oh, that was that was Ben or Kent or Marjorie.
That was a good one.
Well, Ben later, when he gets the job with Uber at the beginning of season 6 and tries to excuse his... what can only be interpreted as casual racism towards Asians when he uses a certain term, say, oh, no, I'm married to one. She's an Oriental. Like, oh, okay. And then the next thing you know, he's not there anymore in that job. But one of my favorite, I guess this would be a Ben and Kent moment, is season 2. I want to say it's the second episode of season 2 when they're debating whether to send troops to somewhere. I can't remember if it was to rescue the hikers or whatever. And Kent gives the noodle analogy, which I literally think about every time I use a microwave now, when he perfectly times it like you can't putting in troops too soon, you know, means that won't work. But if we go in too late, that won't work either. Much like these noodles, they will be dry if I leave them in too long, but they will not be fully cooked if I don't cook them enough. And that is why you have to do it at the right time. And then he snaps his fingers and the microwave goes ding at the exact same moment. And Ben, with the perfect response, like, you made up that whole fucking speech, that whole fucking noodle analogy, just to get that ding. You are fucking pathetic. Every time I use a microwave now.
Oh, they're so good. And I've enjoyed too the he's came in late in the game, but Andy Daly is kind of the liaison.
Keith Quinn. Yeah,
hired the wrong Keith Quinn at first, but he's just so good because you didn't expect anything out. Like, did you guys see the twist coming where he was kind of the mole?
No, definitely not.
Oh,
go fuck yourself, Keith Quinn. Okay. Turn around and leave. Yeah, it's been a great season and a great run for sure. And the finale is upon us this Sunday, and I think we've at least given enough meat to the show, which was my goal, to make it listenable after. I didn't want it to be just about the finale. So if folks wanted to listen to the tribute to Veep even past the finale, there'd be plenty of kind of meat to dig into there. So why don't we really quick, before we get to our predictions, just want to talk to those who may be listening for the first time or anyone else. What's going on? We have two feeds at PlaySummation.com, PlaySummation Pop and PlaySummation Wrestling. On the Pop feed, a lot of stuff like this, movies, a ton of comics. If you're into comics, you know, Marvel and beyond, and, you know, DC, we have stuff. And also some sports talk. We have, you know, current movie talk. We have past movie talk, live watches. There's so much stuff on the Pop feed for anyone just into pop culture or sports. You know, we had two spoiler-filled Avengers Endgame podcasts that were really, really well done. We had a great summer movie preview with our buddy Andy Atherton on a show called Looking Forward, Looking Back. Russell Sellers hosts a show called DC Post-Crisis Management. You know, Marvel's kind of the big rage out there, but DC shouldn't be overlooked or forgotten. He does a great job kind of bringing that out to the forefront. Todd Weber does reviews, pod blasts of Game of Thrones, the last season that's going on right now. We had our buddy Cowboy and John D'Amato did a NFL draft recap. So there's so much stuff on the Pop feed that's well worth a listen. And we are actually doing kind of a, aggregation for our listeners out there. The podcast, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, which is a comic show, is doing a giant special edition of their show retrospective looking back at the full Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they're asking anyone who's seen all the movies to rank them 1 to 22 and submit them to NickD at PlaceMation.com. They're going to take all the aggregates and then kind of reveal the official order from those listeners and fans out there. So if you've seen all the movies and you're interested in submitting a list, you can send that over there. Alternatively, if you're into wrestling, we have the PlaceMation Wrestling feed with great shows. We have the Place to Be podcast with me and my partner Scott. We're going through chronologically through the history of the WWF. And Peter, I mentioned earlier, you're on that show a lot. Also, Scott hosts the Main Event with Nate Milton and Steve Willey, where they take a look at current world of wrestling. Our buddy Ben Zanny does a show called Row One Seat One, where he talks about all, you know, to all different friends and family of his that have gone or really kind of diehard live event attendees. And that's even beyond wrestling. Like, he had a guest on episode 2 that has visited every MLB stadium and has been to a ton of UFC events. So he talks about that experience. We have Greg, Tim, and Jenny. They are talking WCW. They take a look at specific wrestlers and kind of break down matches of theirs, 3 matches at a time, and kind of give a, you know, various spectrum. And it's a really fun and funny listen as well. And then, you know, one of my other projects I have going on is with my buddy Jeff Machado, who is a novice wrestling fan, has never really followed much, but that's not because he didn't want to. So I'm taking him through you know, the history of wrestling, teaching him, and he's really funny, he's really into it, and it's a real fun show to do, and it's one of our most acclaimed ones that we do. And on this last episode, I spent a good 40 minutes talking about the foibles of my grandmother's funeral. So definitely tune in just to hear that, if nothing else, because it was quite the event that I walk you through, and Jeff's reaction throughout the whole thing are funny too. And it turns into a little diatribe on Catholicism at times as well, but, you know, check that out. So lots going on our 2 feeds and PlayStation.com. I just really wanted to touch on that for anyone who may just be checking this out for the first time. So with all that said, guys, the finale, Veep, this Sunday coming up. Sad, but also exciting, because we're finally going to find out. Will Selina Meyer finally take the throne as President of the United States? Will it be Richard Spletz? Will it be Montez, Laura Montez? Will it be Dan Egan? Who the hell knows? You know, like this, I feel like it could end up being anyone. But I feel like the main players are going to be, you know, it's either, to me, there's 4, right, that you have to handicap. There's Selena, there's Tom James, there is Jonah Ryan, and then Richard Spletz, right? I mean, like, I feel like one of those 4 is probably going to end up as president. Those are the 4 I'm leaning toward at the moment. I know you could sit here and think, okay, well, maybe they run something and Cammy ends up, but I feel like she's just been a red herring through this whole process. Like, you just kind of keep waiting for Selena to lose to her and getting pissed off. But I just feel like she's there just to kind of bait you in. I don't see her being the one that wins, and I don't think they go back to Montez. Like, I think those are 2 red herrings. I think one of the 4 I mentioned, to me, stands out as the most likely. And I feel like the most likely scenario is Selena ends up as vice president under one of these folks. So that's kind of what I'm working with right now. Peter, what do you have as kind of your prevailing scenario heading into the finale?
Well, what comes to mind first, and this is going to sound weird, is there's a song years ago by the band They Might Be Giants called James K. Polk. And in it, they tell the story of how James K. Polk became president. In 1844, the Democrats were split, the whole deal. And basically, James K. Polk was the compromise candidate at the convention that year and goes on to win the presidency. I think what's going to happen is at the convention, there will be some sort of deadlock with Jonah raising hell on the floor and Selina Meyer, and nobody can get a majority. So they all get together and decide, you know what? We're going to continue this failing or we could accidentally moving upward trend. Mm-hmm. And we're going to nominate Richard Spletz as the candidate because now he is the governor of Iowa. So it is plausible to envision him, even though he's been governor for like a week, I think, in the storyline. So that, I don't even think you end with the presidential election. I think you end it with something like Richard saying to Selena, would you like to be my Veep?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. So yeah, we don't even get to the election. We just get to him asking her. I mean, she has to end up a vice president, right? I mean, it just has to be the way, because that's been the whole show. It started that way. She was stuck, boxed in, no way out, but she's such a power whore that she'll take it, right? So you can completely envision her taking that role under any of these people. I mean, the real comical one would be Jonah, right? Jonah moves on and she ends up under him. But I feel like that's almost too telegraphed too. Like you just keep waiting for him to break through. I think it's more likely he gets shot than elected because they've kind of hinted at that a couple times as well. As long as we get Uncle Jeff laughing at whatever malady he undercomes. But I have a feeling we may have seen the last of Jeff. I think him laughing it up at the funeral and almost dying of laughter, which I thought he was going to do. I really thought they were going to have him die right there at the thing. Like, it's kind of like the end of his usefulness. He, you know, he was able to see Jonah kill his dad and laugh at him at the funeral and then die a happy man. Don, what are you leaning toward?
I see everything you guys are talking about in terms of the four. I definitely think it's so obviously we're not going to have, Selena be the president. I think it has to come full circle, possibly with even a very similar scene to, you know, season one to really come back if we do see someone ascend to the presidency. But Jonah Ryan, if they want to kind of, you know, take a shot at Trump, obviously, because Trump was this unlikely candidate. No one said he was going to win. He, you know, went off script constantly. He didn't give a shit. And I feel that's also too obvious. I'm leaning towards Richard. Same thing. You know, he's only been governor for this short amount of time, but I feel too he's the one we could actually see because he was the person we would least, you know, expect to ever get to that position. And what they've done with him in just these last few episodes from the 7-Eleven, the dog mayor, and, you know, to governor now, I feel like it's setting up for that. But Peter, I like Peter's theory too. That's actually really interesting.
I feel like they have to be setting up something with him failing up, right? I mean, like, they're not going to keep doing it for no reason. Like, he quickly moved up three roles already, and it has to be for some reason. Is it because they're going to do the same thing and make a president? Or, you know, Dan hints at the end of the episode he's a superdelegate now. So does it come down to him actually swinging the vote? And now he has to choose between Jonah and Selena, who he's kind of been behind both of them. Is that the role he's meant to play and not become actually president, but be the guy who determines who will run for president? Because they pretty much have set that up, I feel like, with that throwaway line at the very end of the episode, like, you're a superdelegate now, with that, you know, becoming governor of Iowa. So he can choose for himself who he'll vote for, and, you know, does he become the tie-breaking vote, and basically they're all clamoring for his attention. Is that the way we go?
I think that's very possible. I think I based my theory on, and this is a show for people. Well, I think it goes if you have an interest, any sort of interest in politics, you'll enjoy this show. And people who enjoy political theater, I found they tend to love, especially political reporters, love when there's a deadlocked political convention, which is why I'm convinced that this is something that's going to happen in this last episode, because it hasn't happened in reality in over 50 years because they try to avoid the chaos that happens. But chaos on Veep is inevitable at every turn. So it feels like that's what's going to happen. It's just a hunch that I have based on how political reporters, mm-hmm. you know, the spirit of political reporters kind of shines through in this show, and they all have like a hard on for, oh, there could be a deadlock convention, and there never is. So this would be the chance to say, what would it be like if one played out like that in the modern era?
And they seem to maybe be setting it up by having like nine candidates. They had to do the junior debate and all that stuff. So, I mean, could we see something crazy where, like, you know, whoever that cowboy guy or whatever, you know, ends up winning it? Like, you know, they could do something crazy like that too. But we also can't discount, you know, we got China in the mix, right? I mean, she's made the deal basically with them about Tibet. So is that going to come into play? Does she back off of that and that's how she loses and then they swing behind someone else? Like, that's how I could see Jonah also winning, is that they end up backing him to go in and because he agrees to do something stupid or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many pieces. And the other piece of this too, does anyone end up in jail? Like, like, we're like on the, you know, threshold of like all these people ending up in prison for various reasons. Like, where does Ben end up? Where does Kent end up? Like, are they all just, you know, if Selena doesn't win, are they still part of her staff? Or she's, you know, it's like, there's all those pieces of the puzzle as well, where all these sub characters are going to end up in the end. And they all deserve an ending. You know, they can't just be hand waved away.
Well, I hope Selena doesn't end up in jail, because then the Elaine comparison would be on the nose with the final episode. I don't think that'll happen. They already did the jail thing with Erickson all those seasons ago. So,
and they kind of did it here too. Like, they teased it. Like, I don't think they'll go right back to it. You know, they kind of teased it for the war crimes, and then we're like, she doesn't really care. No, you know, they don't really care about it. But, and then you got the animal stuff. So where does that come in? Like this, a lot of, I'm curious how long this episode is going to be, because they don't ever tend to go too much past their little half hour block, but there's like so many things in the air. Like, how are you going to wrap all this up? You got the wedding, right? I mean, they're going to have to show that too. So you got the wedding for Catherine. You have all these characters have to get wrapped up. We have to solve who's going to at least move on to the general election to become president. And you have, you know, the Chinese stuff, the animals, you know, PETA stuff that's out there. It's like, there's so many pieces. Plus you have Gary, you know, what happens with him and Selena? Is anything going to happen? Is he finally going to confess his feelings? You know, it's like, there's so many pieces just floating out there for this episode. This is going to be crazy how they cram it all in.
Well, there's two things with this season that I haven't been particularly crazy about. One of them is that it's a 7-episode season instead of the 10 mm-hmm. that we've become accustomed to. So it's kind of like driving 82 in a 65. Yeah, you're probably, you know, safely driving there, but you know, you're going a little fast, quite frankly.
Right. Some stuff feels rushed. Yes.
With these last few episodes, unlike you, I watch this show live because, like I said, I like to text the quotes back and forth with my friend. But unfortunately, these last few weeks with Game of Thrones running long and the Westeros Conference playoffs going into overtime every week, the show's going on at 11, so I'm staying up extra late. So I don't know. Is it on at 11 this week? I haven't checked yet.
It is, because with Game of Thrones, because what Game of Thrones also has a shorter final season, and interestingly, we're waiting to see who's going to actually ascend to the Iron Throne, much like with the presidency here. But because they were doing fewer episodes, the last four, they decided to make them into hour and a half, so they wouldn't feel like it was cramming the story. And I actually thought when I heard Veep was only going to be 7 episodes, I said, oh, there'll be a few of those then that are at least an hour. So I'm kind of surprised they brought it back around the same time of Game of Thrones and didn't wait until Game of Thrones ended and then, you know, maybe did some hour, maybe even hour and a half episodes to really, you know, wrap up these stories with fidelity and whatnot. So I agree with you that is it definitely going to be an hour on Sunday? Did they say it's going to? I mean, I feel like it has to be.
I haven't seen anything. I need to check my guide, I guess. But, you know, I wonder how much of the scheduling really got thrown off by Julie Louis Dreyfus's breast cancer. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder how much of that played a role in how much they could film. And I'm a little shaky on the timeline there. I'm not 100%.
They are set for 50 minutes this 50? Sunday, okay. Starting at 10:50 right, Eastern.
Oh, okay.
I am planning to watch the finale live, I think. I think I'm going to – I don't want to be spoiled on anything, so I think I got to watch it. So, Don, I'll leave it to you if you're going to try and just coffee up and try and watch it together. Or, like I said, I'm happy to rewatch it with you the next day or whatever. But I am definitely planning to watch the finale live.
That's a haul. Yeah. Yeah, they already said they're definitely starting it around, I think it's like 10:51.
Yeah. So, and then it'll be an hour long. So, there you go. Take it almost midnight. Yeah. But it's it's one of those ones I feel like if I don't see it, then I get spoiled, which is entirely possible. Even though I don't see a ton on Twitter. Like, I usually been watching on Tuesday mornings at the gym, and I've made it every time without getting spoiled. But I feel like this could, you know, drop, because I do follow like a bunch of them on Twitter and stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, here is the actual episode description as I'm reading it here. The nominating fight between Selena and her rivals reaches its climax as their race comes to a historic finish. So,
I think we see the main election.
It's just vague enough to leave quite a bit of mystery there.
Yeah, I think we see the general election. I think we have to see her. It has to end with her as Veep. It just has to. I mean, that's the fitting. The whole show has been around her inability to get past that point. And even when she did, it was just so brief and then ripped from her again.
Yeah.
Timothy Simons, by the way, who plays Jonah Ryan, is a good follow on Twitter. And it's funny because he's the exact opposite in real life. He's extremely liberal and very political activist, very opposite of Jonah Ryan, which is funny. I have been meaning to order a Jonah Ryan shirt, by the way. They always pop up on my Facebook feed. Is like, you know, I know he was doing it for charity at one point as well. So I got to check that out because I keep wanting to get
one. Oh, nice.
All right. Any other thoughts? Dan and Amy, anything happen with them? Do they end up together?
Yeah. See, that's another one too. They've been tempting, and not, these characters don't always get these positive, you know, endings here. But because it's the last episode, I could see that because they've had the relationship in the past, and you know, he saw her in the last episode. I forget what he said to her, but he thought it was another woman, and it was a new dress she had on, and she clearly wants to tangibly be back with him. So I could see that maybe settling down. Who knows? If they fast forward, they may fast forward too, like after the election, you know, I could see them going like, you know, 5 years down the line and checking in with everybody of where they are. So I don't know. Maybe it's one of those where Dan is this family man. We don't expect it. But
yeah,
still,
but
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, he's with the OBGYN now, though.
That's true.
So it seems like that. yeah, that might lead. By the way, not the first show in which he dated an OBGYN, as he also did. I believe he dated Mindy Kaling on the Mindy Project. So
yes,
one of those sort of cross show things.
I feel like they've invested so much time into him and Amy, and kind of like the Sam and Diane of this thing. So I mean, I feel like they have to pay it off somehow. I do think they teased a little bit of Amy and Jonah in this last episode, like just a hint, perhaps. But I think her and Dan end up together. I just think they've put way too much investment and time into their relationship to just have it not lead to anything. And they're too sharp and well written of a show. And if they don't end up together, it's going to have a very specific reason and pay off why.
Well, they had that moment too, like in, it was like in kind of by the water, where I think it was like right after he got rejected by those gay men. Because they thought he was too old, and he had that conversation with Amy about stuff that just didn't matter. I think he was just talking about something sexual, but it almost indicated like does he have this change of heart? But then you know the next episode later, was he with her sister again?
Yeah,
and then it was Selena, and then the OBGYN, and then there was somebody else. So it's like he was back to his ways. So I don't know that's 50-50 right now of whether or not they actually do. In my book,
I'm going to say that they don't end up together, and I'm fine with it because they are who they are, and they would drive each other nutty in the long run.
All right, final call before we wrap up. Peter, who is present at the end of the show?
Well, for whatever reason, I tend to think that they're not going to get to the election, but I'm gonna go with President Richard T. Splett.
Vice President?
Selina Meyer, of course.
Don?
Oh, because I'm leaning towards Richard as well. Just because I don't think that's one that's going to see come. But you know what? Just to be different, because I was going back with him too. I'm going to throw out Jonah and Selena as his VP because I just love the dynamics there because she fucking hates him.
All right. I'll go completely different just to make it three different answers. And I'm going to go Tom James as president with Selena Meyer as vice president because I feel like they've also invested a ton in that story for him not to just vanish walking off the stage pissed off at the debate. I think he screws her one last time and she ends up as vice president and they end up together. I think they killed Andrew for a reason to finally kind of get her over that hump. So even if she doesn't end up, even if he's not president, I do think we're going to see Tom and Selena together and it's going to drive Gary insane. So I think that's what we see. I don't think Gary and Selena will end up together. But I do think she does end up with Tom James. I think that's another one they've spent so much time on to not pay it off would be just kind of weird for this show. All right.
A lot of ground to cover.
One last thing, I'm going to ask you. We'll start with you, Don. Rank them: Seinfeld, Curb, Veep.
Oh man, wow, oof, this is tough. God, I'd still probably have to go. I'd probably go. Can I do this last, or you need me to go now? You need me to say this now.
Peter, you got it?
This is
no?
hard.
Oh, waiter, I'm ready to order.
All right, go ahead.
my order is Veep Seinfeld Curb. Now, I've watched Curb far less than either of the other shows because, I mean, it's not in syndication or anything like a lot of the HBO shows. It's like you're not going to turn on TBS and see Curb Your Enthusiasm at 8:35 on a on a Friday or Saturday night or whatever. Curb to me is Larry David's character. He's just too goddamn neurotic and unlikable most of the time. It's like, now I haven't seen much of the later season, so maybe I would change my mind by watching more of it. And there is certainly a lot of funny stuff there, but I rank Veep ahead of Seinfeld, not necessarily because Seinfeld is so neurotic. It's just that, like I said, in watching Veep, the amount that I've laughed watching this show over 7 seasons, 65 episodes, is just incredible. I mean, it's rewatchable as hell. I can go back and watch just any of these seasons, whereas Seinfeld, first 2 seasons, I could take it or leave it, quite frankly.
Is Veep the greatest sitcom of all time in your mind, then?
Yes, it is.
Wow. That is heavy, heavy praise. I am going to go... I just have a hard time not putting Seinfeld 1, so I'm going Seinfeld 1. Even though I've pretty much sat here and give you every reason why it's not better than the characters and the show, but I'm going Seinfeld 1, Veep 2, and Curb 3. And I love Curb so much. But I if you're nitpicking, and like these are all like A+, you know, I mean, you're really nitpicking, just like top performers. But if I had to dock, like, I just think Curb has more down than the other two. Like, there's down episodes, there's down scenes. The peak Curb scenes may be the best of the three. Like, the real peak Curb is, like, next level. Seinfeld, I have to give them credit, Don. You know, we always, you kind of mentioned it was like a detraction before, that they can't swear. Like, but you have to almost credit for them, too. Like, they don't have the ease of the heavy, you know, swearing or just the stuff that they break out on Veep. That's not even vulgarity. I don't know what it is. like they don't have the, you know, and the way they towed the line and the storylines and the, you know, the way they pushed and pushed during an era where that stuff wasn't as able to be as open. They couldn't do it on network TV. They were in a family friendly primetime, you know, time slot, and some of the stuff that they still were to accomplish in that setting. And when you also look at it, the comparisons to Curb stand out to me because you're led by, you know, lower grade quality actor. And this isn't to diminish Jerry Seinfeld. He's, you know, amazing comedian, not the best actor, maybe by the end he picked up. But I think I just feel like it overcame much more than Veep and Curb had to excel. So, and they also did it a lot more. You know, they were doing 20-something episodes a season versus Curb's 10 and Veep's, you know, 8 to 10.
Yeah.
So they're doing it at a much higher volume. And so their hit rate, sure, may, you know, they may have more losses, but like a great pitcher who may have 300 wins and, you know, 180 or 200 losses just because they're around so long versus Veep, who, like the Sandy Koufax comparison was a good one, maybe their winning percentage is higher, but they also have, you know, didn't do it as long a time. So it's a real tough comparison. The lines are so thin between the three. They're all amazing programs, but I would go Seinfeld, Veep, Curb. So it is finally your fucking time, Don. Do it.
Yeah, I know because it's, you know, when we first met and started hanging out, we, you know, Seinfeld was this, that, you know, we quoted that constantly. We always come back with the references to that. And I would have to say, because of the fact it's stood the test of time, I feel like I laugh at Veep more than I did at Seinfeld, but I feel like there's more quotes from Seinfeld. But if I have to go based on that, I think I now, with what I've done, it would be Veep, Seinfeld, Curb.
Wow.
Yeah. And it really is, I think, just due to what Julia Louis-Dreyfus has done, and you've heard me say, like, she's better on this than Seinfeld. And not that Seinfeld wasn't funny. There's just, it's also brilliant. I feel like I've said that about both of these shows tonight. But in terms of rewatching, I feel like I could rewatch every season of Veep, every episode. There wasn't one to me where I was like, this episode sucked.
Right.
And I felt that there was the ones from Seinfeld collectively, especially like in the last season, where they might have got, you know, a little bit lazy with that. But it's close. It's like a close second to me. I wouldn't have said that when I first started watching Veep, but because of, you know, these seven seasons collectively now together and what they've been able to master, how they've been able to work almost as a tighter ensemble. And it might be due to the fact that it's HBO and they can swear, they're, you know, unfiltered. That I think is also part of my ranking. It's tough. I know. I feel like I've just committed a fucking sin by not putting Seinfeld one on, but
so do you think Veep's like the greatest sitcom of all time then?
Yeah, by a little bit of a margin, I'd have to say so, yeah. I have to say it trumps Seinfeld in my book. And I never thought anything would it, they're two different shows, but I feel like what it's done in its short time too, even though it's fewer episodes, had it been 22 episode seasons mm-hmm. for Veep, I don't know if I would say the same thing. So that's another factor. It's 10 episodes versus 22, 23. But that's what I'd probably say. I think it would be number one. I know. Ouch.
Peter, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the greatest TV actress ever, or greatest comedy TV? Like, where are you ranking her overall? Give me overall TV versus just like, I mean, I think it's hard to argue against her as the funny, you know, the greatest sitcom actress of all time. I think that's a lock. I'd be surprised if anyone disagreed. How about just overall?
She's unquestionably the greatest comedic, like, sitcom actress. I think she passed Lucille Ball like a long time ago. Left her in the dust probably several years ago, like season 3 or 4 of Veep. With her, the question is she the greatest actor? And I'm going to exclude dramas, TV dramas from this, and just, you know, her genre is the TV comedy. Mm-hmm. And it basically comes down, like, she's in that Ted Danson level where multiple iconic characters, mm-hmm. like, over multiple decades. And the question is she, you know, higher than Ted Danson, who had Cheers, and then, you know, Becker, for whatever that was worth. I mean, people watched that show. It was on for like 7 years. And now with The Good Place as well, which is also a great show. I mean, it'd be very easy for me to rank her number one just based on the recency bias of Veep being so great. But she probably is number one all time for TV actor or actress in a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, and when we think of the icons, I'm glad you know, Ted Danson's obviously notable, but again, coming back to what I said, because she was able to, her iconic character of Elaine, which was awesome, and she held her own with three other men in that, and to break the curse, you know, we always talked about the Seinfeld curse, and she, you know, she had the New Adventures of Old Christine, which I watched here and there, but then to get into this role, to win all these awards, to put just her mark, this actually, I think she ended up putting the stamp on this without a doubt, to the point where I'm curious to see what she's going to do next. And it also puts a little bit of fear in there for me, like, for her, because whatever she does next is absolutely going to be scrutinized mm-hmm. to a T. Now compared, I think, to Selena more than compared to Elaine. But on the other side of that too, because I like to see both sides, if you don't have that fan base of Veep and they just see her as Elaine, you know, they may not put her up as just number one. But I think in order to rank her, you've had to see both of these shows. And in my book, obviously, because I ranked them that way, two iconic shows. And she's played two different characters to the utmost level of talent that I've ever seen. I mean, just comic timing, even some subtle moments of drama, which the show doesn't always go into that territory, but mm-hmm. when it's done it, like when she found out Andrew died, they tried to create a moment where right. she was legitimately upset when she went at like Keith Quinn. And it's like, wow, she can just shift to that if she needed to. So I'd like to see her potentially now in a drama that also pushes that envelope, because I think she's mastered the comedic world without a doubt.
Is she one of the biggest whiffs for Saturday Night Live that they had her on the roster and didn't use her?
I don't think it was as much of a whiff as like people just do not pay attention at all to that period of time when she was on the show. Because I mean, Lorne Michaels gives that 80 to 85 era a good burying because he wasn't there, which I guess is his right. But that's when she was there. I mean,
but she was underutilized, right? I mean, I just remember reading in one of the Saturday Night books, like talking about how she would barely get any time. Like that's when she left. Like I think she decided to quit.
Oh, yeah.
She wouldn't get any screen time pretty much.
I think it was a man's world too at that point. Yeah. More so than we're seeing now on SNL.
If that version of Julia Louis-Dreyfus turns up on SNL in 2005, 2006, when Tina Fey is the head writer, even a little before that, I mean, she's the biggest star on that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well.
Yep.
So there you have it. Yep. Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I mean, Eddie, how are you gonna outshine Eddie Murphy on SNL like in his prime like that? I mean,
it's tough. I mean, but maybe if they use her a little bit more, she sticks around and then eventually blows up into something. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like she just went so under the radar. Maybe she wasn't ready either. Who knows? I mean, Seinfeld wasn't until a few years later. So who knows? She does have Christmas Vacation in there, which is good. But it sounds like it sounds like you have Julia Louis-Dreyfus over Patrick Duffy and Suzanne Somers then from Step by Step. As far as the greatest of all time. So
and a little bit over Claude Aiken. Wow.
Not Christine Lakin, though. She's number one in my heart. Mm-hmm. All right. There you have it. Obviously, we all think very highly of Veep. If you haven't watched it and you've listened to this, thank you. You should watch it. If you have watched it, you should go watch it again and relive everything. I think eventually I'm going to do that. Maybe we'll do something on the site with it because it is such an amazing show and deserves the love. So thank you to all that put on this show. It's been an amazing ride. And you know, I think we've said everything we need to say about the cast and the writers and the creation of the show. And we'll watch excitedly Sunday night for the finale and rewatch for many years to come. So that's Don. That's Peter. I'm JT. We are out. We'll talk to you soon. Everyone take care and be sure to check out everything else we have to offer at PlaceMation.com. Team Selena for life. Take care.